Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I am one of your hosts, Alex Kross, and I'm alongside Casey Clapp,
who sheepishly hangs his head in shame.
Here's the deal. This episode, Casey, you picked.
I'm sorry.
You put that chin up in the air,
all right,
my friend.
All right, hold on. Okay, there we go. Oh gosh. All right, so we're doing a podcast today. It's about a species of juniper in the genus Juniperus in the family Cupressaceae, of which there are many. However, in the middle, beginning, you know, somewhere in the podcast.
Yes.
You referred to it as the Utah juniper. I confirmed that.
Right.
And then as later
in
the podcast.
Okay.
No, I'm not blaming you.
No.
You said it and I was like, yes, that's right. I should have been more firm and said, nay, we are doing today the Rocky Mountain juniper. Spoiler alert. Sorry, I should have said that before.
That's okay.
Not the Utah juniper. I have made the error in the show of saying that they are the same thing.
Right.
They are not.
Yes. So the episode you're about to listen to, this is not the episode, you guys.
Yeah. Exciting, isn't it?
This is a pre-roll to the episode. But it's we fooled you.
Yeah. Can we call this the prologue?
Yes. This is the prologue.
Yes.
The episode you're about to listen to is the Rocky Mountain juniper, which we will brand it as such in the title. Mm-hmm. And all of the copy on the Instagram will mention this as the Rocky Mountain juniper. However,
important.
In the first half of the episode, we call it the Utah juniper about a million times. So just ignore that and do a search and replace.
Yes.
Every time we say Utah, replace it with Rocky Mountain and you've got it.
Exactly.
And listen, we could go back and re-record, but that's really not going to happen and not our style.
So, as always, the podcast regrets the error.
The podcast regrets the error. And with that,
enjoy the episode.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I am one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson, and I'm alongside, as always, the rim-lit Casey Clapp.
Ooh, what does that even mean, Alex?
In film speak, a rim light is a light that you shine on the sort of the back of the character's head.
Okay.
And creates sort of a halo effect on the back of the...
Oh.
And you are sitting in front of this brightly lit window. And
hello.
You are angelic, my boy.
Hello.
How are you, Casey?
I'm doing very well. I've been very productive today.
Yeah, you had a whole slew of things, and you showed up here, and you were... I guess, sort of like the Tasmanian devil at the end of his swirliness.
Okay, yeah, that seems about right.
And it contrasted very hard with my mood, and I rose to meet you, and now we're both a little manic.
Hey, I feel good. I like this manic. This is how I work best, I think.
Wow.
Many times.
Sure.
Sometimes everyone's like, you need to slow down, but...
Yeah.
Okay. All right, take it easy.
We've had that conversation a couple times.
Yeah, it's true, we have. But you know what? Today is not that day.
No, today is a day for excitement and fun, because we're talking about a super cool tree that I know nothing about, and a super cool topic that I know nothing about.
Yes, which is... it's going to be exciting, Alex, because this is one that I kind of gloss over every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
And today we're going to be able to talk about it.
Oh, wow.
Now, you haven't heard of this tree before, but you've been to, say, the eastern part of the state of Oregon.
I have heard of this tree before.
The Intermountain West?
Yes. I mean, I've probably even seen this tree before, but I've never heard of the topic before.
Ah, okay.
Enough teasing. Casey.
Oh, my gosh.
Today we're talking about the Utah juniper.
That is right.
Juniperus.
Scopularum.
Thank you.
I was waiting. I wanted you to do it. I'm mm-hmm. sorry.
Well, I forgot what it was.
They call it that. The Rocky Mountain juniper also. I've heard both terms. Some people also call it Rocky Mountain red cedar.
Oh, wow.
Very frustrating, Alex.
Yeah, what is that all about?
Well, it turns out that this wood is somewhat like reddish. Juniper actually not juniper. It has like different colors of the wood, and it looks superficially like what we call the Western red cedar or the Thuja plicata.
Okay.
But then on the east, they have the Eastern red cedar, which is Juniperus virginiana, which is a juniper that superficially looks like a red cedar.
All of this taxonomy nonsense.
It's nonsense.
It just drives me nuts.
Which is totally reasonable. I'm never going to hold that against you.
Thank you.
It is unreasonable nonsense much of the time. Other times, it does come in very handy.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure. I mean, yeah, splitting hairs, I think, is okay sometimes.
That's when it comes in handy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is the case, but we're going to call it the Rocky Mountain juniper or the Utah juniper. Either one works for me.
Wonderful. Well, let's imagine, as we do every episode, that you and I, hey, how about we're taking a stroll through Eastern Oregon?
Ooh, actually, unfortunately, this doesn't grow in Eastern Oregon specifically.
You just said.
I did, but I was leading towards just junipers.
All right.
The Rocky Mountain juniper and the Western juniper are really, really similar trees.
Well, I had a 50-50 shot.
You did, yeah. And I led you astray. I take that on conscience, personally.
That's okay. This is like when Anakin killed all those children. And Obi-Wan was like, oh my God.
This is on me.
Yeah.
Anakin, you've done this. Yeah, I do. I feel like you have just used your saber to kill all the younglings.
The younglings, yeah. Yes.
Oh, God.
Well, let's imagine instead that we're walking through, I don't know, Utah.
Yeah, let's go with Utah.
And we come across some junipers. Casey.
Yes.
As always, let's ID this tree.
Let's do it. Okay, I need to say something. I'm going back. I looked closer. There are allegedly some spaces where it grows over in northeastern Oregon.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Alex.
That's okay.
The younglings. The younglings.
I don't want to flippantly use the term gaslighting.
Wow.
But
let's just move on. Okay, so we're walking through a forest somewhere between Eastern Oregon and Utah. Now, the thing with these trees is we've talked about the ponderosa pine previously, yeah?
Sure have.
And as you're going from the west to the east, in the Oregon area, at that kind of latitude, you're going to start with like a lot of conifers that like being on the coast. Different species of pines, Douglas fir, hemlock, western red cedar, spruce, that kind of thing. As you go across the Cascades, it goes up to spruce and true fir and some other pines here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Then as you go further east, it becomes dominated by Douglas fir and ponderosa pine.
Sure.
That is where there's enough water to sustain those kinds of trees. As soon as you go just a little bit further, then you start going south into the Great Basin where you have a lot less water. And this is in Nevada. This is in northern New Mexico, Arizona, California, southern Oregon, Utah, all this big, gigantic Intermountain West, all the way over to Colorado in some cases. The trees that you can see most prevalent on the landscape where it's just a little too dry for ponderosa pine and Douglas fir is a juniper.
Okay.
There's plenty of different species that grow. Some of them hybridize. Some of them are really closely related. But in this big area, if you see a tree and you start walking up from like a scrub desert and get to a little bit of elevation, boom, you're going to see a juniper.
That's the sweet spot.
It's the sweet spot. It's just when there's enough water.
Casey, I want to interject and yes. I want to note something.
All right.
Very fittingly, there is some tree work being done outside of my apartment.
That's true.
So if you hear some
It's not a cow.
It's not a cow. It's a chainsaw, you silly.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up because I try to every now and then talk over it as if it's not happening.
Just sure.
Put my fingers in my ears and ignore it.
And you know, these mics are pretty directional, so you may not be able to hear it, but there is a chance. I remember that season one vacuum.
Yes. Oh, classic season one vacuum.
Season one was full of vacuums.
It happens with every single season one I've ever seen on anything.
Remember Seinfeld, all the vacuums?
Yeah, it was crazy. It was like they could afford it to have someone just come later.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Casey, let's push through this noise and talk about, hey, can I propose that we talk about the foliage?
Oh, yeah.
The leaves?
Yes. That's actually the very first thing I want to talk about. They have, the junipers, two kind of things. Now, this their foliage is famously scale-like. But junipers also have a different kind of foliage every now and then that is awl-like. Now, you're familiar with the idea of awl-like leaves?
Awl.
Yes. And that's
A-U-L.
That is A-W-L.
Okay.
Yeah, there's two U's there.
Awl-like.
So essentially, an awl is like an old kind of pick.
Okay, yes.
Where it's triangular at one side, then it goes to a point.
Uh-huh.
That is awl, A-W-L,
like. Okay.
And that is usually a kind of needle or a kind of leaf that is pressed to the stem at the base, and then it pops off into a point at the top. Like the giant sequoia is a perfect example.
I was going to say, we just talked about this with another tree, and I couldn't remember. Okay, great. Yes, that, all like.
Perfect. So that is this tree, or junipers kind of more broadly. However, the Utah juniper tends not to do that. They have scale-like leaf, and junipers famously have both kinds of leaves.
On the same tree?
On the same tree.
Interesting.
A lot of times it is a response to damage of some kind.
Okay.
So an animal comes, chews on it, then the next leaves that grow from that space that just got chewed on are, instead of going to be scale-like leaves, they're going to be awl-like because they're way more uncomfortable and pokey.
Oh, so the scale is maybe its default mode, and then awl is like, this guy's in trouble. He's growing awl-like.
Exactly. Now, usually the one we're talking about, Utah juniper, Scopularum, doesn't really do that very often.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure that it can, but most of the stuff I read, it's not very common.
That's exciting.
Yeah, but then other junipers do this, and that's a really good ID characteristic. If you're just looking at the foliage, and you see, there's two different kinds of foliage on the same plant.
Yeah.
It's probably a juniper.
Great.
But in this case, they have this adorable scale-like foliage. It's pressed to the stem, and it's usually these really like kind of short and nubby stems and like little twigs. So some junipers have really long twigs with really, you know, they're just very stringy.
Mm-hmm.
This one, everything's a little bit shorter. It's a little bit nubbier, I think.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that for sure. They almost look like little jacks. You know, like that old fashioned toy, the jack?
Yeah, I think so. Like the little X's? Uh-huh. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they kind of look like little jacks.
Yeah.
Casey's processing.
I feel like they're fat jacks,
They're fat jacks.
Like you dipped them in a couple extra layers of metal to get them just a little bit wider.
Fat jack is a good kind of an old noir nickname.
Yeah.
You go ahead.
I was talking to Fat Jack the other day and he looked me right in the eye and I knew he was lying.
Yeah. The first place you want to check is at Fat Jack's. It's a bar downtown.
Just smoking a cigar. Anyway, so they have these cool seed cones, the junipers. We always love a good seed cone.
Yeah,
and,
man.
Now you're familiar with cones, right?
You know what? I know of a cone.
Okay. So this cone is very similar to all the other cones. This is in the cypress family.
Yeah.
Their cones, actually, are these tiny little, maybe a little bit smaller than dime size globes. They're globose, so that means they're very, very round, right?
Globose.
Instead of being like a little elongated.
Yeah.
Isn't globose a good term? Like,
wonderful.
You don't need to guess what it means. You're like, oh, yeah, I think I know.
Yes, they're absolutely globose. They are not kind of like elongated like most cones.
Yeah.
And they also don't even look like most cones.
They don't at all
from afar, or even not that afar. They appear to be a berry.
They do. They're so adorable as like little berries, right?
Yeah, they're really cute.
So they're these perfect little circular things that have like the tiniest little like kind of points on them, where like it would be the end of one of those scales.
Yeah,
and they're very hard to see, but if you hold them in your hand, you can kind of like find them. And they're covered in a glaucous coating.
Wow.
That is this blue, like light blue bloom, which is what we call it. Same kind of stuff you see on a blueberry, where they kind of have that like coating on the outside, then you can kind of rub it off with your fingers.
You'll be proud of me. My next question was, is that bloom?
Oh, it is bloom. I am proud of you, Alex.
Thank you.
Yes, yes, yes. You're,
hey,
you're good.
Are there any fruits that grow in Florida that have bloom?
I'm sure. I can't think of any right off the top of my head.
Would you maybe call those Orlando bloom?
Oh, if they're in Orlando. This thing's covered in Orlando bloom right now.
I'll see myself out.
Please do. I feel like no one wants to eat something that's covered in Orlando bloom.
Well, I'm sure many people beg to differ, Casey.
I guess that's true. My brain for some reason was like, what would that actually be? And I thought just pollution from the city of Orlando.
Oh, I imagine it as Orlando bloom laying out with like naked with like sushi on it. Like one of those, you know, like businessman retreats.
He's just there, like, dinner's ready.
You know that scene where Viggo kicked the helmet?
He broke his toe.
A lot of people don't know that.
I'm Orlando Bloom.
Yeah, Case, these cones are really cool.
Oh, that was so good.
And so they're covered in bloom. Can you peel that off and there's like cone material underneath?
You actually cannot.
Okay.
If you just like rub it off, then they're kind of this dark, dark blue underneath.
Okay.
And the thing about it is that they brightly colored, and like there's extra bloom on top of them, and then they're darker blue underneath,
mm-hmm.
and they are really juicy. Not like berry kind of juicy, but they are very moist on the inside.
Really?
Yeah, like if you dry them, of course they will dry out. If you don't dry them, you just kind of like have them, you see them on the tree. If you like kind of crush them and kind of rip them apart, they're going to be like you're ripping apart like some like really tight, like kind of woody berry.
That's very strange.
It is very strange. And that is the thing about these trees, is that the junipers have decided, instead of just letting their cones go, very similar to the yew, they have co-opted birds and other animals to do it for them.
Right.
So they make it look like a berry. They make it be juicy, kind of like a berry. You eat it, you're probably going to get a couple nutrients here, a couple nutrients there.
Yeah.
And then, shkaboom, the birds take it away. Inside, they have maybe two or three seeds, not a whole lot of seeds inside these little cones. And then those seeds will get dropped with the bird droppings. Now you have a new juniper growing.
I just think it's really cool that the tree is kind of adapted to get other natures to work with it.
It's exactly the thing. And that is kind of the subject that we're going to talk about in a second.
Wow.
But before we do, I want to also note these trees don't get very big.
Okay.
Kind of small trees. They grow in this desert area. They have bark that's really shaggy and kind of fibrous, breaks apart in kind of these long strips, and is generally like has little strips that kind of pop off of this kind of scaly bark. It's kind of weird to imagine it be scaly and fibrous and like kind of pop off, but then as it ages, it kind of stays on. It kind of changes as the tree ages.
It's kind of a mess.
It is. It's kind of a mess, but like it's a beautiful mess.
Yeah.
It's just gorgeous.
It's going for a lot of different categories.
Yeah. But what I love about it is that the green foliage is, this is usually during the summertime. Sometimes they can turn different colors. Funny enough, Western red cedars do this. They kind of turn a little bronze when it gets really cold outside.
The bark does?
Yeah, when they're dormant. Not the bark, the foliage.
Oh.
It goes from this lustrous green to a little bit of a bronzish color.
Interesting.
I think it's some way to protect the leaves from either the cold or like really bright sun.
Just like a little bit deciduous.
Not deciduous. They just like pull in some of their, all the leaves stay there.
Mm-hmm.
But they just kind of pull and change color, so they move the pigments around. around.
I guess that's what I mean by deciduous, a little bit deciduous.
I see.
It goes a little bit toward that direction, but then, it's not fully committing.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
But what's nice is that these trees develop this, their bark is like this really brown, grayish kind of color, especially as it ages, it turns more gray.
Mm-hmm.
And the when they're really young, that's when you get the most like scaliness on the bark.
Hmm.
And it really looks extra nice when you have this sort of fading brown, gray bark. Out to the edges, it's peeling with this kind of reddish, grayish kind of peeliness to it, with these really tight-knit green, sometimes bronze, sometimes bluish foliage. And then these berries, they just pop like these little white, gray, like little pop, 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 pop all over the tree. Sometimes it just looks so fabulous. You're just like, oh my God, that tree is a gorgeous mess.
You know what it is?
What?
It's the Technicolor Dream Tree.
It is. This is the Technicolor Dream Tree. Again, found in Utah. Oh, Utah. They always get everything.
We have plenty more to say about the Utah juniper right after a quick break. We'll be right back with more.
Completely Arbitrary.
Casey.
Hi, Alex.
You know something about me?
I do.
And you do know this, that I love to be cozy.
Yes, that is very true. Unfortunately, I have to get you out of your bed to do work, you know, because our studio here is small.
Yeah, Casey physically drags me out of bed every morning. And you know what?
Slap a pair of headphones on.
And you know what I'm sleeping on, Casey?
What are you sleeping on today, Alex?
My brand new Cozy Earth bedding.
Oh, Alex, I heard about this.
And you know what I'm sleeping in?
What?
My brand new Cozy Earth jogger set.
Ooh, hold on. Let me get a feel of that. Not your sheet. I'm getting my own sheet.
That's right.
Ooh, this is smooth.
Casey is wrapped in his new Cozy Earth bedding. Now, Casey just returned from Italy.
Just got back.
Land of soft fabrics.
Exactly.
And he has waiting for him products from our brand new sponsor, Cozy Earth. Casey, what do you think?
This is incredible. I don't think I've ever felt something so soft and so like, I don't know. It feels silky and smooth and it looks beautiful.
It's true, Casey. And you know what? I have been sleeping in my Cozy Earth clothing.
Well, Alex, have you noticed anything about your sleep?
I have been sleeping so well. And here are some things I love about sleeping in my Cozy Earth bedding and my Cozy Earth clothes.
Yeah.
This is no longer officially an ad. This is just me talking.
Hey, let everyone just come on in. Just come on in here.
Casey, it is temperature regulating, so I no longer have any problems with getting too warm, getting too cool, having to get up and shut the window, having to get up and open the window, turn the heat on, turn the heat off. I sleep through the night. Soon I'll be eating solid foods. And I have such a good time doing it. Casey, I know you've been traveling, you've been flying, you've been not sleeping in your own bed. I cannot tell you how excited I am for you to try this brand new Cozy Earth bedding.
I cannot tell you how much I agree. Just feeling it, I'm essentially swaddled in a sheet right now, Alex.
That's right,
and
you are.
I cannot tell you how excited. I'm going to wash this. I'm going to throw it on my bed today.
Hell yeah.
So if you want to be as cozy as Alex and I, then go to CozyEarth.com and after your purchase, enter the promo code TREES, T-R-E-E-S, to get 35% off. That's huge.
And Casey, how about this? All of Cozy Earth's products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. I don't have that kind of warranty on my tires.
I don't have that kind of warranty on anything.
So go to CozyEarth.com and use promo code TREES for 35% off. Now go and get cozy.
Yeah, you go get cozy now.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hi, everybody. It's Alex here. And you know what? Come springtime, those trees are a-blooming. Those people are a-walking around. That sun is a-shining. And it makes me so grateful for my social life. People are wanting to do things again. And it can be extremely rewarding to start to see friends more often and, you know, go on cute friend dates or romantical dates. Sit on a patio and drink a coffee. Ooh la la. But it's really easy to overdo it. And for me, it's very important
to keep an eye on my social battery. Every time I go on a social outing, I come home and I'm like, wow, I am really tired in a very specific way. Well, that's my battery. That's my social battery being drained. And I didn't really have this language until I started going to therapy. I didn't know why being around people made me so exhausted, even though I love those people and enjoy being around them. But therapy helped me with my self-awareness and helped me unlock some language that I didn't otherwise have. And if you are struggling with feelings and thoughts that you don't understand, therapy can be a great way to unlock the power of understanding. And a great way to start is BetterHelp. It's completely online and it's designed to be super convenient and flexible, which is very important. How many times have you had a therapy session on the calendar and that time rolls around and you think, I gotta drive all the way across town. I am not gonna go. It has, of course, happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to everybody who's been in therapy. No worries with BetterHelp. It's all online. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, of course. And nobody nails it on their first time. It's like going on dates. You gotta find the right therapist for you. It's silly to think that the very first date you ever go on is going to be your future spouse. So you can switch therapists at any time, no additional charge. It's extremely easy. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/trees today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/trees. Happy spring.
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today we're talking the Utah Juniper. Casey, a quick correction. Go for it.
Oh my God. We are not talking the Utah Juniper.
What?
I'm sorry. We're talking the Rocky Mountain Juniper. For the longest time, I kind of thought they were the same thing.
Oh.
But I've only very recently been like exposed to them as I've gone to the Southwest multiple times this last year. So I was like, all right, I'm getting used to it. Oh, there's this one. It's the Utah Juniper. Oh, it's the Rocky Mountain Juniper. And then as I was, we took a break just now. As we came back from the break, I had realized when I looked through two different things, there was made reference while looking at one to the other. And I was like, it's like when you realize you have twins amongst you.
Yeah.
And you don't realize it until all of a sudden you see them in the same room together.
Wait, I need a clarification.
Yes.
This is not our Utah Juniper episode.
This is our Rocky Mountain Juniper episode.
Then we have to start over?
Yeah, we got to start over entirely.
I mean, I'm suggesting this for real.
What?
We talked so much about Utah Juniper.
No, but everything I was describing was the Rocky Mountain Juniper.
Wow.
So I've been going through the scientific name, the everything. It's all, everything's correct, except it's actually just the Rocky Mountain Juniper. The Utah Juniper is a completely different thing.
Jesus Christ.
Do you want to start over?
No, but here's what we'll do. We'll put in a correction at the beginning of this episode.
Yeah.
I'll edit this out.
Okay.
And we'll say, here's what happened. And then we'll mention it in this post-break thing.
It's terrifying.
And now I see why you were upset.
Yeah, because we kind of went for it, you know? But yeah. Then I also said, yeah, Utah Juniper. And it's not a Utah Juniper.
Well, everybody loves a big twist. And this is ours today.
This is the big twist.
So today we're talking Rocky Mountain Juniper. Is it still the same scientific? That's all the same.
Yes. That is what hasn't changed.
Okay. Everything you've said about this tree holds true except for the common name, which is Rocky Mountain Juniper.
That is correct. We are doing Juniperus scopularum.
Welcome back to the Rocky Mountain Juniper episode of Completely Arbitrary. Casey.
Alex.
We've made our correction.
I'm such an ashamed person.
No, we have, all of our listeners are very understanding, and the three that aren't will let us know, and we will ignore their email and move on.
Okay, just to set the record straight, we're talking the Rocky Mountain Juniper, right. Juniperus scopularum. Everything is exactly perfect. It's got those same kind of adorable little things that we were talking about.
Yeah, we talked about it. We're moving on.
Okay.
Casey, we got a big subject to talk about today.
Yes, we do.
I have no idea what it is, but I know what it's called. Convergent Evolution?
Correct.
Okay.
So, evolution is a process, Alex. It does not have a direction. It does not have an agenda. It doesn't seek something in the way that it's like, it would be really good if I developed a tail. And then a couple millions of years later, you have a tail.
Right.
The tail either happens or it doesn't happen based on selection.
Okay.
At the population level. This is where a lot of people get it confused. Remember we talked evolution a while back between the Lamarckians who said, you know, oh, it's better for the giraffes to have the tall necks. Oh. So they slowly over time develop taller necks.
Right.
It is actually the Darwinian style where you have a giant population where the ones that have just a little bit taller neck end up reproducing more often. The ones that have a smaller neck, for whatever reason, maybe just produce less. So then over time, these changes in the population in like percentages and proportions lead a population to change.
Got it.
So convergent evolution is that process. However, what's cool about it and where it makes it like why did they give this thing a specific name? It's when you have a strategy at a larger level. Think of a strategy of a plant is like, I'm going to use insects to pollinate me, or I'm going to be wind pollinated, or I'm going to develop these kinds of things and grow in a dry habitat or a wet habitat. You know,
I'm going to send out aerial roots to strengthen my stronghold. Who am I?
Yes. You are a fig,
mm-hmm.
A strangler fig.
That's right.
Yes, it is a similar thing. So you end up kind of developing these traits and these different things. But what's convergent evolution is when one thing, and this can go from animals or plants. We're going to focus on plants today,
mm-hmm.
Where they develop the same or very similar characteristics or adaptations to solve a certain problem, and that comes from these two completely different places, but is the same thing at the end of the day.
Okay.
Does this make any sense?
Two different species.
Yep.
Developing two similar strategies.
Correct.
To a similar situation.
Or the same problem. Yeah, the same situation.
The same problem, but that live very far away from each other.
Not necessarily far away. They could be in the same exact spot. They could be neighbors.
Okay. Why is that cool and important?
Here's why. So if you are a, let's say you are a cherry tree.
Got it.
You are growing and you develop this cherry. Now birds are going to eat your fruit and be like, sweet, I'm going to do that. That would come from a flowering plant. So all the different kinds of flowering plants had these seeds inside the ovary. Those then would create this fruit. That fruit would get eaten by something. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the thing about flowering plants, is that they really, the very first one split off from whatever other line it had, started making the flowers and making the fruit in some way co-opted, you know, some species don't do this, but many of them co-opted animals to do the pollination, animals to eat the fruit, spread their seed.
Mm-hmm.
Other plants just didn't do this. Mostly, let's say the conifers. They develop these cones, and they're usually pollinated by wind most of the time, and their seeds are usually spread by the wind or some other thing. So, convergent evolution, these two plants, you know, the broadleaf cherry tree that develops this succulent red thing,
right.
And all the other kinds of trees, you know, you think of this as a clade where it's one big branch of the evolutionary tree.
Okay.
All the angiosperms, all those flowering plants,
mm-hmm.
Each one of them, maybe the very first one, developed this fruit, and then others said, nah, we actually don't need it to be, you know, delicious. So they stopped doing it. But the very first one, and then a bunch of them way down that line, all developed this one trait of these fruit they want to be eaten.
Okay, so
succulent.
All trees that grow flowers could be a part of a clade.
Yes, exactly. Okay. They are, yeah.
All 100%. Conifers are a clade?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, they are all part of that one branch. You
Got
cut
it.
Off the gymnosperms, conifers are going to come with it.
And Pinus is at the top of that branch?
Yeah, well, it's just one end of that branch.
Oh.
And then the other families in the other genus genre are also ends of that branch.
Oh.
Exactly. And
okay.
Then you go from the genus, and then those branches go back to the families, then those branches go back to the orders, and then so on and so forth, up that line.
Okay, until you get to trees.
No. Oh, Alex, that's foreshadowing for a future episode.
Wow.
Trees are not a clade.
Shocked.
You had to remind yourself the emotion you needed to have there. We'll talk about that later. That would throw us completely off in our conversation.
I don't want to do that today.
That's good. So convergent evolution is when you have two completely unrelated things do that same thing.
Okay.
And so it's weird because you're like, wait a second. If they all were related, kind of makes sense that they could develop these same traits.
Sure.
An apple and a peach and a cherry and a quince. All these are in the same family. The sorbus, which is the mountain ash, or the rowan tree, the white beam, there's a couple others that I can think of. All the hawthorns, all that. Those are all in the rose family. So because they're all in the rose family, they're all really closely related, they all have these different kinds of succulent fruit that are eaten by birds.
Yeah.
Totally makes sense. It's just, you know, you've taken the same thing and you have just amended it a little bit, and now you're a different species doing something slightly different.
It makes sense because they're related, is what you're saying.
Exactly. Okay. It makes sense because they're related.
Okay.
Now, what doesn't make sense, what kind of boggles the mind, is when you have a yew tree, a conifer, develop the same exact thing for the same purpose, but they are so vastly unrelated that it makes you wonder, like, how did that develop in the first place?
Oh, because a yew is, like, for lack of a better term, mimicking a fruit tree.
Exactly. Even though
it's a conifer.
It's a conifer.
I see.
It initially developed those cones that are not eaten.
Very interesting.
A juniper, very specifically our Rocky Mountain juniper, and just to throw a loop in there, also the Utah juniper.
Oh, don't even.
They developed that same exact thing. So they, over time, have developed these berries. We call them juniper berries. They are cones in every definition of the word.
Right.
But they've developed this kind of blue color that birds are caught, or that catches birds' eye. Mm-hmm. They're like, that looks delicious. They also are way more juicy than a normal cone. Like, you can rip it apart in the kind of outer section of the cone scales. It's all kind of mashed together.
In the way that you have scale-like needles.
Yeah.
Or needle-like leaves, rather.
Uh-huh.
This is a cone. This is a berry-like cone.
Yes. That's it. Yeah. So that is a quintessential example of convergent evolution.
That's very interesting.
And you can take this in a bunch of different ways, especially with animals, where you have a bird and mammals, a bat.
Yes.
They have solved the same problem, i.e. flight,
right,
with completely different mechanisms in completely different ways.
But
they're both still flying.
That's fascinating, Casey. You were right. This is interesting.
Yes!
Let's think of another animal example, because I think, I don't know why, but that seems more interesting than the tree examples.
Okay, well, a couple other examples would be different kinds of, well, insects don't quite meet this definition, because they all came from the same thing. They're all distantly related.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of different insects that have made different changes to their anatomy to do other things.
Okay.
So some will mimic, like you said with the snake, they'll mimic other insects. There's a certain spider that looks almost exactly like an ant.
Wow.
And that will, like, no one wants to eat it because it looks like an ant. They're like, whoa, don't get close to that thing, but it's actually a spider.
The snake I was thinking of earlier, you just reminded me, it turns its tail into a spider-looking thing. It has, like, legs that crawl.
Oh, that's so disgusting.
And so a bird comes down, and then the snake snaps at it.
That is terrifying.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well,
okay.
So there are, I'd have to sit down and look, and if you want, Alex, we can pause and I can look up some great examples.
Sure, Casey, although I may have an example, I want to run this by you and tell me if I'm barking up the wrong tree here.
Oh, my God.
Hey, that's animals and trees.
Get out of here.
Okay, you have seals.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
And you have penguins. Now, penguins are a bird.
Yes.
A seal is a water mammal.
Correct.
Penguins swim.
Yes, really, really well.
Extremely well. Like half the time they're swimming, right?
Yeah.
Seals swim.
Yes, they do.
But they also walk some of the time.
Correct. Well, and they both do.
Yeah.
But the thing is, that's a perfect example where they have both developed anatomy that's very specific to solving the same problem, i.e. getting around efficiently in water.
Yeah.
So they both have developed like wings that look and act like flippers, mm-hmm. or limbs that look and act like flippers.
Right.
They also have developed like noses that can like squish themselves down. And what are they all mimicking and like also like really kind of becoming more and more like is fish.
Yes.
Which is a completely
That's a double
different
example.
Thing. Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
And that is, this is a great introduction, like you already did, to this other idea that we're going to talk about some other time, about the strategy versus the biology of it.
Okay.
So the strategy is doing fish things, mm-hmm. being in water and efficiently navigating in water.
Efficient.
Right now we've come up with a bird, fish, and a mammal that all do it really, really well.
Yeah, yeah. And there are many more.
There are many more. And so all those things, people would say, oh, well, these are all fish. Like,
right.
Conveniently, you can say that. Although, now that we know, like, you know, it's like, that's not a fish. That's clearly a dolphin. That's
yeah.
a mammal. We know this. We've done, you know, we lurked on it. But there are other, like, perfect examples where if you go back and, like, follow, I think there was an example of a lungfish and a salmon or something.
Mm.
For all intents and purposes, they just look like the same thing. But if you go and follow their evolutionary history, they go to different clades. So then if you cut off all the clade of one that, say, has the salmon in it, you apparently have to include a bunch of other things that are not fish.
Wow.
So then that, like, really, that it'll be a conversation again, but this is a great primer where you kind of see the difference between a strategy that an animal or a plant takes versus where it came from.
Yeah.
And that is really the kind of curious thing about convergent evolution, where they converge, the evolutionary strategies that has developed in these animals
mm-hmm.
converges on the same solution. And that's, of course, what it is. Then there's divergent, where you have the same exact thing, where a very closely related animal diverges one direction or another and becomes something completely different.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. There's also examples like in birds where they develop similar kinds of beaks, even though they're bird species that are related in like the far distant galaxies of relations and things like that.
Hmm.
Although, again, that one's not quite the same. It's the closer they are related, the more it becomes divergent evolution than it can be convergent evolution.
I see.
Does that make sense?
So part of the key of the definition of convergent evolution
uh-huh.
is that they are very dissimilarly related.
Yes.
Or they, distantly related is what I meant to say.
Exactly. Yeah. They come, you have to have the, like, if you're using your elbows and your fingers, the further away your elbows are and the closer your fingers get together, that would be considered convergent evolution.
Casey's making a pyramid shape with his hands.
Yeah, I am. Versus if you put your elbows close together and your fingers far apart, those are now it's really hard to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially if you like
flexibility isn't great.
It's not bad. That's
touch bad. Your elbows, yeah. Everybody. You can do it.
Do your best. Well, if your elbows together, those are closely related things and they're diverging away.
I see.
And that could be, you know, a penguin versus an albatross or an ostrich, you know, they all distantly way, way back were the same thing that then diverged and diverged and diverged. But like a hummingbird and an ostrich and a penguin and a seagull are all really closely related in the grand scheme. Closely related in, like, you know, they speak the same language, not at all. But they are very much like on that clade list.
Yeah.
You cut the branch that includes all the birds, that includes all of them. That's all on that branch.
That's wild.
Yeah. But then there's all sorts of different things. I think also insects versus other flying things like birds, they've developed similar wings that flap and they go do things mm-hmm. and they can fly away.
Are there some more tree examples?
Oh yeah, there are. So the yew is a fantastic example.
Yes.
But then anything that is kind of a further away species, where again, when you become a tree, or when you are a tree or are a plant, at some point you can trace all plants back together, and they kind of do the same thing. But some will converge in the sense of having different leaf examples or different leaf textures, where certain leaves, let's say it's a conifer that has really tight-knit leaves that grow really, really close together. Oh, the bristlecone pine, great example.
Okay.
Where it's actually a five-needle pine. All the needles stay really, really tight, close into each other, and they're really tightly spaced on the twig. That essentially, in their really high alpine environment, keeps them really compact and they warm themselves up. So it helps keep their twigs literally warm, like they're wearing a little bit of a sweater.
I remember that, yeah.
Versus their other plants, we call them cushion plants, or like a cushion. And they are little plants that grow up at these really high alpine places as well. Mm-hmm. But they stay really short, and all of their different leaves grow really tight and really thickly covered in little hairs way down, like it looks like a little cushion on a bunch of rocks.
Oh, okay.
Like a phlox is an example. There's some buckwheats that do this.
Okay.
And they stay really, really tiny. That way wind kind of just blows past them and doesn't like go and really cause them a whole bunch of trouble.
Okay.
There are other things that grow thorns and develop different strategies to live in the desert, where they have really thick, like cactus is a great example. Cactus and succulents kind of closely related, but they are kind of also distantly related, where you can have a certain plant that grows a bunch of spikes and thorns and things like that, and they've moved their chlorophyll more into their stems and then use their old leaves and buds as spikes.
Wow.
Versus that's exactly what the cacti do.
Yeah.
So the cacti and this other thing could be way distantly related, but like they both develop thorns, for example.
Right.
So these kinds of things. So there's some great examples, especially with fruit and how fruit is eaten. The yew and the juniper specifically are the like golden examples.
Yeah.
Where they've co-opted birds to do the same thing that the flowering plants figured out a long time ago. But then with all these other spikes and all these other things, it's the same thing. And there's an example of a euphorbia. It's a these two kinds of succulents, and I'll show you a picture of them.
Okay,
they look almost exactly the same.
Yes, Casey's showing me what looks like a boule, like a bread boule.
Oh, what is a bread?
Like a sourdough boule.
I have never ever heard of that.
It's just like a round loaf of bread.
Yeah, well, and it turns out that photo, I was like, I think I've seen this before. It's on the Wikipedia page of convergent evolution.
Oh, wow.
I was looking at a different website. It's called Uncanny Examples of Convergent Evolution in treehugger.com. Exactly. But this one, it's great because obviously it's a perfect example. It's between a euphorbia species and an astrophytum, which are only distantly related, but they've almost look exactly the same. Like the structure of their plant is almost exactly the same.
They found the same answer different ways.
And Alex, this is what makes like convergent evolution as an evolutionary idea so curious, because this is a process, like I said at the very, very get-go, evolution does not have a direction. Like, okay, now you're growing in the desert, you must develop this.
Right.
It's more that a bunch of plants exist, and the pressures that are around on their population end up weeding out all these other different kinds of strategies that could work. So if it starts to basically shift its genes towards one thing and that is more successful, you get more of those things. So convergent evolution as an idea, evolutionarily speaking, makes perfect sense. Throw a bunch of things out there, give them a couple million years of very slow changes, and all of a sudden you're like, yeah, they've developed all the same things because they are all dealing with the same problem.
Wow.
Versus the divergent evolution, that's where you have a bunch of different niches, you throw the same thing on it, and then each one of those things has to adjust to those individual niches.
Right.
And then that is when you get this divergence of evolution.
Huh.
But it's such a fascinating thing. Like, you're just like, okay, the plants are not making this decision. It's not like, well, I'm gonna puff up
right
in order to be this,
because it almost seems like they're and I know this is not the case, but I, you know, in my creative mind, I'm like, oh, that plant is watching that other plant be successful at something.
Yeah.
It's going to adapt to look like it, but it doesn't know what other plants look like.
Exactly. It's at least we know.
A really slow, random process that ended up where it is.
Exactly. It kind of takes the romanticism out of it a little bit.
But that's fine.
That's fine.
It doesn't need to be romantic.
It doesn't need to be romantic. Thank you, Alex.
I think I can draw an analogy here, Casey.
Oh, okay. Please
and
do.
It's either going to be great or it's going to flop. But it's from my world. Are you familiar with Joseph Campbell?
Not quite. I think I know the name. Honestly, you might have said it to me before.
Probably. Joseph Campbell was like a folklorian, a mythological scholar, writer, philosopher. What's the study of people?
Anthropologist.
An anthropologist. He basically studied folklore and myth from peoples all around the world from all different time periods.
Okay, yeah.
Pre-internet, right? Where we could share everything across the world in an instant.
I remember those days.
And basically found this process of storytelling called the hero's journey. I'm sure you've heard of this.
Yes, for sure.
The hero's journey is like an 8-step circle that takes a character, a protagonist, through a sort of a prescribed set of processes.
No way.
Including death and rebirth and return to normalcy, but with something has changed.
Yeah.
99% of every movie and book you've ever read uses this formula. And he found that, you know, ancient Egyptians and ancient Aztecans?
Yeah, probably.
Basically, we're all telling the same stories.
You're kidding me.
People in, you know, 1700s Japan.
Yeah.
And people in 1300s England. We're all telling the same stories.
Alex, that's so fascinating.
All these people from the vast stretches of history came up with the same thing through like a collective consciousness. I'm not describing it well at all, but this is basically what I know about it.
I mean, that it makes perfect sense, like what you're saying in terms of like how you're describing it. So you're doing justice.
Okay, thank you. So he wrote a book called Hero with a Thousand Faces.
Hero with a Thousand Faces.
It is one of the densest pieces of literature I've ever attempted to read. I mean, a paragraph a night, basically, is what you're getting through when you're reading this thing. There's companion pieces. And
okay,
stuff.
Gotcha.
But yeah, he basically found that through some sort of vast collective human consciousness, we all tell the same stories from without knowing it.
Yeah, that is very curious because that is like something that you. Like it makes intuitive sense. Like it's like, yeah, of course. I mean, that makes sense. But that is like, that's like the definition of this kind of idea where everything is dealing with the same problem.
Yeah.
And that problem is, you know, morality. Like, how do I convince you to do something? Or how do I like encourage you, like telling these stories? And they always come up with the same thing because that's what gets the emotional response.
Right.
How many stories do you think each one of these people told before they found that? Like a story that everyone just kind of forgot. They're like, that's not a very good story. But let me tell you about this guy.
Yes, yeah.
And then tells this one story. That story gets remembered. And then all the rest of them. That's a perfect example.
Does that ring true with convergent evolution?
I think it does because if you take it and you frame it in this kind of like, there is a problem. And like the problem is telling someone or expressing, conveying a certain morality or behavior, mm-hmm. or ideology, or even an ideal in terms of what is a good person, what is a hero, you know, that kind of thing. And you want to tell this story and you want that story to be remembered, mm-hmm. and you want that story to have meaning. You can tell it 1,000 different ways, but if you leave one of those different parts out, then you may not think that it is extremely, you know, viable. Or maybe it's just forgettable. Maybe it's just like, then he became good again. And it's like, well, that wasn't a very compelling story.
Right.
You know, and then these ancient people are kind of like, that was boring, Franz. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, it's not super exciting. Like, if you told a story like, Jack needed meat, so he went hunting. and he killed a buffalo and he brought it back and everybody was happy.
Yeah.
It's like, not, you know, you need the steps, you need the drama, you need the death and rebirth.
Exactly. That did not develop like when we invented Michael Bay or anything right. like that. So yeah, I think it's a perfect example, Alex, because even in the idea of like taking a population of things mm-hmm. and then each one of them does something different, somehow has a different set of traits.
Yeah.
The ones that have the more traits that work just a little bit better are going to live just a little bit more, or maybe reproduce just a little bit more. And then over so long, these old ones just kind of that don't reproduce quite as much, they just don't succeed over the long period of time. A million stories come out and only the best end up surviving
right.
in these people's whose lives depended on these good stories, because that's how they, you know, oral tradition was passed down.
It's very curious that that's your takeaway, because that is not quite the link I was making.
Oh, really?
I was making the link of these two different, we'll call them species. And by species, I mean two different peoples from two different areas in the world, from two different timelines.
Like cultures.
Yes.
Yeah.
They find the same solution to a problem
yeah.
independently.
I see.
So I was making a link to convergent evolution, that these two different species, unrelated,
mm-hmm.
even though all humans are related,
yeah.
Found a solution to the same problem in two different ways.
I think
knowing the other was doing it, yes, and able yeah. to look at them and take notes.
I think we're saying the same thing.
Okay.
I that's how I was thinking you were taking it.
Okay.
I was just providing also like a foundation that it happened in each one of those individual cultures.
I see.
There's a million stories, they all end up becoming this one story per culture.
Yeah.
Then that one story has now been like, yeah, we solved the same problem the same way you did.
Right.
It just happens to be that our hero has a different name, you know, and has yeah, a different yeah. life story and all this history. I see you, and I think you're exactly right.
I love when we find a connection from both of our worlds.
It's so good. Like, it makes my day, because then that's half the reason, Alex, we are putting this podcast together, because everything, this is our famous slogan, which is like plastered all over Times Square all the time.
Yes.
Trees and other related topics.
Right.
Because if like we're bringing like, oh, this like socioeconomic, not even so, the sociocultural like basic truth of humanity
yeah.
across cultural bounds also can be has the same like basic bones of how you get a echidna and a hedgehog,
mm-hmm.
you know, or a dolphin and a shark, and they've solved the same problem. Like, it's the same kind of like base understanding.
Yeah.
And it just makes you think like, well, everything kind of works the same.
Yeah.
You just have to figure out how that formula can apply in this different way. And then you can kind of see the world in a whole different way, where you're like, oh, wow, we are distantly related, but we're not like not communicating. Like, we all see the world in the same way. It kind of brings together this idea of perception, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe we all live on the same planet.
Exactly.
Which informs everything we do and think.
In every way.
Yeah.
Stunning, Alex. I think that's a perfect roundup.
Wonderful, Casey. And speaking of roundup, let's not round up our scores for our review of the Rocky Mountain. I almost said Rocky Mountain Oyster. Of the Rocky Mountain Juniper.
Ew, who knows what a Rocky Mountain Oyster is?
Oh, this is grisly.
Yeah.
Here's how it works. We're going to give some final thoughts on this tree and then give it a rating of 0 to 10 Golden Cones of Honor. Casey, as our resident expert, we begin with you.
All right. I will go. So I love junipers, most junipers of all kind. However, I have something special in my heart, specifically, and I will get this right, for the Rocky Mountain juniper,
right.
which is Juniperus scapularum.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I think it's so cool is that it's got a huge range, but it's very kind of like diverse. It has a diverse range, but it's really big. So it kind of grows everywhere in the Intermountain West, like the west side of the Rockies all the way over to the east side of the Cascades or the Sierra Nevada in some regard. The thing about them is it's the only tree you're going to find in a lot of these areas. It's just too cold, or it's just too dry, or it's too wet. And then if it's too wet, other trees are going to grow there and now compete it. But in the areas where you're like, I'm kind of on this like cliff side and I'm just hanging out. Oh my gosh, there's a tree right there. That is a tree that has been growing in the crack in the rock for 400 years.
Yeah.
And it's just it's just kicking it. That is a Rocky Mountain juniper. In the middle of the Great Basin, where you like go up to 5,000 feet elevation and there's a little tree growing there, that's a juniper. Like they are the trees that basically, when you're in the driest, worst part of the world, it's not the worst part in terms of like, it's a lovely place. Don't get me wrong. I'm going back in like 2 months. It is the worst part in terms of like conditions. Mm. It's not a cushy environment for plants.
I see.
And so those plants that do grow there, and the juniper specifically, that's like, hey, it's great here, everyone. Yeah. And it's just kicking it. It reminds you that it's not that bad. And you can certainly do it. It's a little bit of adversity, but get it done. And the convergent evolution of junipers make them such a cool plant. I think they're great. They don't get very tall. Nah. They grow in really rough conditions. Excellent. I have to say, I would give this a... I'm going to give it a 7.5. It has some downfalls.
Casey, I think that's a great score.
Thank you. I know. If there's other things, I'm excited right now about this tree.
Yeah.
If you give me some other trees, I could probably be like, well, junipers. If I'm only surrounded by junipers, then right. I get a little bit bummed. And also, I have to say, they lose a little bit of points because they're so good at living in those areas that they actually will take all the water in the surrounding soil and not let anything else live.
Oh, wow.
So it actually, a lot of times people have to cut down junipers because we stopped forest fires. So now junipers are like taking over where they used to not. And because they're doing that, they're kind of like sucking the ground dry.
A little faux allelopathic.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of like, you know, they're good. They're almost too good at doing it. But, you know, I guess that's the, if you're good, don't hate the player.
Yeah.
Anyway.
They're sort of ball hogs.
Yeah, they are. But you know what? I guess if you got the biggest hands, then...
And then they just nail three-pointers all day long.
All day long.
You can't really fault them.
Yeah, you can't really fault them.
All right.
Go junipers.
The Rocky Mountain Juniper is my favorite basketball team.
Oh, they should change their name. Those Rocky Mountain Junipers, the Rocky Mountain Notch Junipers. Anyway, Alex, what do you think? This has been a complex episode.
Yes,
a complex tree.
You know what? I'm fond of the juniper. I learned a lot about it today, and I like how it's come up with a solution to a problem that is so odd.
Yeah, compared to all of its homies where it came from.
Yeah.
It's very odd. That's a perfect way to describe it.
You know, like, it's like it went to art school with all these other conifers.
Uh-huh.
And then it went off and did, like, it never sold out and, like, did Coke commercials. It just, like, continued to do street art forever.
Yeah.
That didn't make any sense and nobody watched, but it was, like, so true to its heart.
And you're only going to know about it, like, a couple millions of years later.
Yes.
And be like, wow, that was really good.
Yes.
Really good job, juniper.
100%.
All right, that's a funny way to put it. I was thinking you were going to be, like, it went to school for, like, engineering because all of its family has always done engineering for the last million years.
Yeah.
And then it decides to go to art school
right.
and is like, no, my cones will be blue.
Right.
And it's like, what? Oh my gosh. Go hang out with your Aunt You and just stop calling us.
I'd watch that sitcom.
Yeah, I would. Where it's a juniper and a yew, and they just go live with a bunch of very, very flamboyant flowering plants.
Yes.
Yes. Make that happen, Alex.
Not bad.
Not bad at all.
I think the seven range is good for the juniper for me. I'm gonna land on a 7.7.
A 7.7. I think
a 7.7. Yeah.
A 7.7.
Does that have gin in it? Am I making an accidental connection?
Oh, we didn't even talk about that. Another time.
Yeah. We'll have a juniper part two. We'll have a Utah juniper episode.
Oh my gosh.
And talk about gin. That was our review of the Rocky Mountain Juniper. We hope you liked it. Casey, it's time for our completely arbitrary Q&A.
Alex, let's do it.
This week's question is from Jade Paxton. What's up, Jade?
Hi, Jade.
Jade asks, well, Jade sent this very nice email, which I won't read because it's just for us, Casey.
Oh, gosh.
Then followed up with a question. What is your favorite story or piece of media that incorporates trees?
Ah.
It could be a myth or a folktale, a book, a movie game,
or
a video game, etc. My favorite is Tolkien's The Silmarillion, where the Valar, which are basically gods. I think Gandalf is a Valar.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. I never read the Silmarillion.
So is Saruman, I believe, and Radagast.
Yeah, my good friend Julie, who I just talked to, she read the Silmarillion, said that's her favorite book of all the Lord of the Rings.
That's incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
So the Valar create these two beautiful shining trees, Telperion and Lorelin. That are the predecessors to the sun and the moon. Casey, you and I actually have researched this before.
Yes,
for an upcoming project.
Yeah.
Which I won't spoil anything about besides telling you that it exists.
Yes, yes, yes.
Casey, what's your favorite piece of media that involves trees? Go.
Okay, mine is, I have a few, and one of them is, I believe, and I have to like, it is like the stories, I think, in Metamorphosis, that Greek, Greek play, I believe.
Ovid?
I think Ovid's Metamorphosis. I think that's right.
Yes, Metamorphoses is a poem.
Thank you,
by
Alex.
The poet Ovid. It's sort of a poem in the way that like the Odyssey is a poem. Or the
yes,
Iliad.
Exactly. And so all the stories are about these individual things, and it's all like usually some person becoming a plant or some plant becoming a person. Like,
I see.
And I believe that's what a lot of the Metamorphosis is about.
Is that what the fly is based on? Or what's that Camus? Is it Camus? Where somebody turns into a beetle, like a bug?
Oh, I don't know.
Is that from Metamorphosis?
I'm not sure.
Oh, boy.
Maybe we're crossing a bunch of streams here.
We might be.
Let me step back. My favorite is the ancient Greeks and other kinds of myths that come from these really deep traditions. A lot of the Native American traditions have a very similar kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I just haven't found them all yet. And they are the myths about how plants became, and the stories of like the people or the gods or the whoever that that created the name and the plant.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was in Metamorphosis. I can't recall. Or Metamorphoses. Either way, it is a story of how these different people become plants. One of the famous ones I think we talked about was with Zeus and Hermes, I think.
Okay.
And they both came down to Earth, and they were just like, let's go mess around with the Earthlings for a little bit. You know, why not? And they just go and walk around. They're chilling. They dress themselves as essentially like poor beggars.
Okay.
And then they go to this rich, rich boulevard. They go to Beverly Hills in Greece, and they knock on the doors, and they're like, hey, what's up? We're like pretty poor. We're kind of beggars. We're just hoping to grab some food, some water. Can you help us out? And all these rich people are like, oh, go away. And they slam the doors in their face. They do this all the way down the road, and they're just like, well, these people suck. And they knock on this last door, just a little shed of a place. They knock on it, and they knock on the door, and these two old folks open their door, and they're like, hey, what's up? And the guy's like, hey, we need some bread, we need some water, we're travelers, we're hungry, could you help? And they just ask them point blank, would you provide some for us? And these two old people, and I wish I could find this story right now off the top of my head.
Hey, if you know the story, send it to us.
I do, and I know we've looked it up, but like it's right on the tip of my head, which is the frustrating part. So I'm going to get some of the details wrong, but essentially he knocks on the door, or they go inside. The old folks are like, we have almost nothing, but we would love to, like, we'll give you what we can. They say, well, could we have some bread, asks Zeus and Hermes incognito. They then... they say, yes, you can have some. We only have this much bread, so here you go. And they share their measly amount of bread with these two travelers.
Casey, this story is called Baucis and Philemon.
That's it. You've done it. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
I'm looking at it right here. Philemon and Baucis. Yes, it is. It's in Ovid's Metamorphoses. We've done it. So essentially, then the next person or Hermes is like, "Hey, can we have some wine?" And the guy's like, "We don't have a lot of wine." And then they ended up pouring what wine they had and sharing it, like a very measly amount.
Mm.
They finished the bread and the wine, and then all of a sudden, like, "Hey, could I have some more wine?" And then Baucis is like, "Well, I'm sorry, we don't have any more wine." And Hermes is like, "Just see what's in there. See what's left." And they lift the thing, and all of a sudden it's full. And they're like, what?
Mm.
And then, you know, they're like, oh, now we have a bunch of bread. And all of a sudden, magically, you know, they have all that they want. And then the two gods reveal themselves, and they're like, we are Zeus and Hermes. And
they're naked for some reason.
Yeah, oh, yeah, because it's Greek. You know, that's what they do. Yeah. They got it. It's gorgeous. But then they essentially are like, hey, you are the only two people that ever like helped us out, and you have by far the least. So what we're going to do is we're going to grant you whatever you want because you guys were good to us. Mm. And then I think the wish that they say is we want to die at the same time.
Wow.
These two old people.
Jesus.
I know. When they do, I can't remember. It's been a long time since I've read it, but they essentially get turned into either two different trees that are constantly looking at each other, or like a weeping willow where the willows are kind of like twisted. I don't think weeping willows actually existed in Greece at this time when it happened. But essentially, they get turned into trees. Narcissus gets turned into what we call the daffodil, otherwise known as the narcissist, because he's looking at himself in the water. And daffodils famously have their their flowers aiming down.
Is that part of Metamorphoses as well?
I believe so, yeah.
Cool.
Yep, there it is, Narcissus. So anyway, those are my favorite things. There's some ancient Native American lore that has kind of the same thing, like, how did this happen, you know? Mm-hmm. And they come up with these stories that have to do with their tribes and like their people and all these things, and they give they have these creation stories for everything, not just the world, but like all these individual components within it and how everything is and why it is now.
The Douglas fir cone.
Yes.
We've told that story before.
And that's such a fun one. Like, give that a couple thousand years and that's going to be like this lore, but it'll be hopefully like this great hero Douglas was walking through the forest. Back then, the cones were huge, you know? Something like that. So I love those kinds of like myths and stories that tell you how something got there or got to be the way it is.
Love that.
Anyway, sorry for botching that like six times.
It's Bacchus.
Oh, God.
Cool, Case. All right, so I have an answer as well.
What do you have?
This is something I talked about on potentially the previous episode or an episode far before this.
Okay.
It is a video game.
Yeah.
This is just my most recent example. It's on the top of my head, so this is why I bring it up.
I think I know what you're talking about.
It's a video game called Equilinox.
Yes.
It is an indie game. You can find it on Steam if you have a computer that can run a very basic, non-intensive video game. It is basically an evolution sim. Speaking of evolution.
Yes, which is very good.
You start with the ability to grow grass.
Yeah.
And you go from there.
That is, I think that's so funny.
It's not strictly based in science, but it definitely draws from, you know, in order to make a, here's a kind of a quick, easy example.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first trees you unlock is a birch.
Okay.
It's just a birch tree, right?
Yeah, sure.
Now, the birch tree can evolve into three other trees.
Ah, yeah, yeah, yeah.
A red maple.
Okay.
A wobbly tree.
Ooh.
And a pagoda tree. Now, in order to evolve the birch into a red maple, I have to selectively breed it in two ways. I have to have its color be red.
Uh-huh.
And I have to have its altitude above 35 meters.
That's so funny.
So I selectively... choose one of my birch trees to become red.
Yeah.
It evolves. Uh-huh. So the next birch tree that grows has a chance to be red.
Yeah.
Right. It also must be 35 meters up. I can evolve the red 35 meter birch tree into a red maple tree.
Gotcha.
And then I'll just say the rest of this game is, and so on.
Et cetera.
Every plant and animal in the game comes from a plant or animal prior.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you basically, like, one at a time, unlock hundreds of plants and animals and build ecosystems. There are different, like, biomes. There's forests. There's, like, you know, like, temperate forests. Uh-huh. There's, like, jungle. You know, and that's like all the jungle so cool. Species live in the jungle. There's a swamp biome, and uh-huh. All the swamp creatures and the swamp plants live there.
I've seen one that there's snow coming down.
Yes, there's a mountainous area where, and you can only grow certain plants and animals
in certain spaces.
Biomes. Yeah,
I got it.
I can't shut up about this game. It's so good. It's insanely casual and addicting. And yeah, it's, if you have any interest in trees or animals and evolution and science, it's a great thing to pick up. And I basically said this in that episode.
Yeah, spectacular.
But it, this is what that reminded me of.
I think that is such a fun, like, that it's like a very modern media representation of like a natural thing.
Yes,
which I think is so great, because there's like, I don't think there's enough of that, Alex.
Yeah,
like,
it's extremely accessible too. Yeah. I'm gonna go ahead and say this.
Go for it.
Equilinox is the official video game of Completely Arbitrary,
and that has the Alex's stamp of approval. Bagook.
Thank you.
Anytime.
Thank you, Jade, so much for your question. We could talk about that all day. If you have a question about trees, email us at arbitrarypod@gmail.com. That's arbitrarypod@gmail.com. Follow us on the old Instagram. We're doing some fun stuff there. You can keep up with news on the pod and check out the newest merch drops and get some behind-the-scenes info. And there's a post for each episode, so you can see photos of the things we talk about in these episodes. Mm-hmm. At Arbitrary Pod on Instagram. Or you can support this podcast on our Patreon, patreon.com/arbitrarypod. Join the Arboretum for 2 bonus episodes a month about trees and other related topics, or the Cone of the Month Club for unique die-cut cone sticker illustrated by an independent artist sent to you every single month with an info card. It's all very fun and cute. Casey Clapp.
Alex Croson.
Whew, I almost ran out of breath there.
Spectacular job.
Case.
This is exciting.
The Rocky Mountain Juniper.
Yes.
The subject of today's episode.
Has been bastardized. It's not the term I want to use, but you know what? At the beginning of the episode, we kind of messed it up a little bit.
Yes, they will be resolved. And this will just go, you know what, Casey?
It's going to go down in history.
People love this shit.
No, they don't.
They love when we fuck up because it's unique and cool.
Yeah, right. That it's kind of like they're like, well, these guys are fun.
It's a special episode. The one we got wrong.
Thanks for all the metaphorical pats on the head, you guys.
Yeah.
Like the rustles of the hair.
Uh-huh.
Like, oh, you guys, just go out there and have fun, you guys. We don't care if you swing and you miss.
I mean, truly, that is the attitude of 99% of the people who listen to us.
Yes. All right. So, to set the record straight, which I will do multiple times this episode, hopefully, because I'm so embarrassed, there are 2 different trees. One is the Rocky Mountain Juniper, uh-huh, Juniperus scopularum. The other is the Utah juniper, which is Osteosporum.
Right.
Or Osteosperma, excuse me. So, Juniperus osteosperma, the Utah juniper, is not the subject of today's talk.
Right. This is the Rocky Mountain juniper, canonically.
Yes.
And with that, we say thank you so much for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Or goodbye. Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.